Welcome back. Welcome back to the Letters and Layers podcast. This is your host, Amaka. It is Wednesday morning when I am recording. I got back from Texas on Monday after being there for an extended weekend. I left Chicago Thursday evening, was there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and left Monday morning. So it's been pretty much just me trying to catch up on things as far as work. I didn't miss much because it was mostly the weekend that the trip was scheduled for, but you know, still just want to make sure I don't fall behind on anything. And I had some time this morning to get this recorded, so here we are. I'm due for publishing tomorrow, but I'm confident I will be able to record and edit and have it published for you guys on time. So yeah, came back from Texas on Monday. I had a really great time. I stayed with my aunt and her kids, my cousins. I think I've mentioned them on the podcast maybe sometime before. She's my mom's sister, married with her own children, my cousins. And last time I went to Texas a few months ago, I didn't see them. So I asked her like what dates would be good for her. I'll come and like just spend my time with her. And she was traveling abroad. On Sunday, her and my mom and some other friends went to Nigeria. So I was like, oh, okay, let me come. You know, I'll help you with like travel preparations and shopping and things like that. So the weekend was busy, but it was fun because we were just like, from as soon as I touched down and she picked me up, like we were just catching each other up and talking and laughing. And, you know, it was just such a good time. I had such a good time being with her this past weekend. It's like one of those things where we do talk, you know, when we're not together, but it does not replace, you know, being in the same place under the same roof, talking face to face. And I just felt like I was really able to connect, like reconnect, you know, in person. And then, you know, spending time with our kids. She has a daughter who's teenage, like 15 or 16. And then she has three sons who are like, I think one is 12. And like she has twin boys who are like 9, I think 8 or 9. So it's never a dull moment in the house, but it was fun. The night before my mom and aunt left for their travels, my mom and my sister came over. So, and my aunt was cooking to store food for her kids while she was gone. So it was just fun. Like we were all there talking, gisting, catching up, laughing, trolling. Oh my God, just joking with each other. And sometimes I think I lose sight, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, of how much good family time can really energize you and just make you feel like you are not alone. Even if you live on your own, you know, you always remember that you have people. I feel like our generation, it has been us, you know, chasing where the jobs are, you know, and we don't have the luxury that generations before us had to, you know, kind of stay close to our village or, you know, the people that we grew up with. And sometimes it's best to leave, you know, if there are limited opportunities. But I wish there was more emphasis on keeping connected with family that you are on good terms with and that you love, you know, because everyone, that's not the case for everybody. But, you know, as far as the people that you know and you love and are there for you, be there for you at the drop of a hat, the people you know who you can call and you feel safe, and it's priceless. There's nothing like it. So I was just feeling a lot of that this weekend, just being around my family. And I wish I could see them more often, but I'm going to try and see them as much as I can. Thankfully, Chicago to Dallas, where they live, is an hour 45 minute flight, which is much better than the 3.5 hours from New York. So if I was being really ambitious, I could do a day trip. You know, catch an early 7 a.m. flight, be there by 10, spend 12 hours, catch a late flight, be back here at like 1 a.m. It's not that serious though, but you know, if I was really missing them, I could probably do that. But yeah, I had a really great weekend. I got back and, you know, just back to work pretty much. Just trying to set the direction for the rest of the month. We're pretty much at the halfway point, hence it being when you hear this, or when some people may hear this, it'll be on publishing day. So, you know, recording and posting these episodes are always markers for me as far as where we are in the month. And it helps with me to kind of like focus, decide what to focus on. And I've been thinking a lot about where I'm going to be in the next 12 months. And I see that there's potential for a lot of things to change for me. And in good ways. Challenging, but good ways. And I'm trying to lay the groundwork for those changes now. And I feel like sometimes it's hard for me to push myself to kind of do the logistical things and, you know, just the things that I know, the foundational tasks that I know have to get done for me to get to the point where I'm seeing the fruits of my labor, for the things that I feel like could possibly happen for me in the next year. And with everything that I've accomplished so far, I feel like I don't know if I'll ever get to the place where I feel like I've accomplished enough. And that's something that's kind of been, that I've been thinking about kind of off and on. Like, will I ever feel like I've done enough? And I don't know. I gotta be honest. You know, even with all the self-awareness and all the positivity as far as affirmations and, you know, encouraging myself and knowing that I am not the work I do, I am not my productivity level, I'm not this, I'm not that, like, they both kind of butt heads. Like, part of me is like, you are enough if you never did anything else in life. And then another part of me is like, you're never gonna feel like you've done enough. So I feel like, I don't know that people talk enough about the reality of really, it's not that these thoughts ever go away. Sometimes I think it's more about just being aware that they're there and knowing how to not let them take over. Because this is something that I have grappled with and, you know, thought through. It's something that is rooted in how I grew up, the unrealistic expectations from my parents, particularly my dad, and a specific type of life he wanted for me that I fought against as far as career specifically, and internalizing the message that he would never be satisfied or happy with my choices if I didn't take that specific route. And, you know, I've done a lot of work over the years to know that that doesn't matter. Like, I am good as I am, you know, as a person. What I do or the profession I'm in does not define my value as a person. The accomplishments, no matter how many, don't define me as a person. But at the same time, I feel like I'm always going to be fighting the thought that I will never do enough, to be quite honest. So I'm just kind of thinking of all these things. I'm thinking of where I could possibly be in the next year. And that has to do with, you know, tasks that I need to check off, little things that need to get done that'll all contribute to the accomplishments or the goals really that I have set for myself for 2025. And I'm really just trying to like remind myself that I'll still be, my value is not tied to whatever goals I have, you know, or whatever things that I need to accomplish. Because if I meet those goals, you know, which I'm going to do everything to do to get there, who's to say that I'm going to be fulfilled or I'm going to feel fulfilled? Knowing myself, I'm going to get there and then I'm going to kind of like settle a little bit because I'm like, okay, I've done what I wanted to do. And then I'm going to start trying to find a new goal, you know? So that's just ongoing work for me, I think. I think that's just ongoing work. And I think it's worth saying that, you know, we can go to therapy, we can seek out counsel, we can read all the self-help books, you know, we can say the positive affirmations, but it's an ongoing journey to remind yourself of these things. And then for me, particularly, I'm always going to have to remind myself that my value is not tied to my productivity or the tasks that I complete or the accomplishments that I make or the goals that I set or anything like that. So, you know, I wonder if there's anyone listening who knows that there are certain messages that they've internalized over the course of their life that maybe they'll never be able to completely shake. But at the end of the day, they are aware enough to be able to not allow it to take over how they feel or, you know, how they move about with things, how they move through life. So I kind of feel like I'm rambling. I hope what I'm saying is making sense. But yeah, at the end of the day, all I'm saying is I am still doing the work. I'm still doing the work. And I don't know that it's something that I will ever stop doing. So yeah. I wanted to end the discussion around couples therapy today and just kind of talk about where the couples leave things at the end of the last three episodes. So firstly, with Rex and Joey, I feel like I usually start with them. One thing that was really a highlight over the last three episodes was, you know, they were getting along more, they were taking more time going away together, just having quality time together. I think the piece when it comes to intimacy and sex for Joey is still a challenge, but it sounds like they are working through it. She had an epiphany and said that she realizes that there's a way that she is treating Rex that her mom treated her while growing up, because sometimes Rex will offer suggestions or want to do things a certain way that maybe Joey would not have really thought to do it in that way. And then she might discourage him or like just shoot down his suggestion, and it discourages him from bringing other things up or bringing up other, you know, suggestions for things. Because he was talking about how he wanted to paint the garage a certain color, like purple and orange or something like that. Personally, for me, I'm not a fan of that idea either. And I think Joey ultimately discouraged him from doing it. But at the end of the day, he mentioned that, like, ultimately what he wants to do is just be able to follow through on at least some of the suggestions that he makes or some of the things he wants to do, even if he fails, even if the idea is a wash or it doesn't work out. And then Joey has this epiphany and she's like, you know what? I did not realize that this is what I wanted for myself when I was growing up, but how I am behaving towards him is how she behaved towards me, how her mother behaved towards her. So I think that's something that's really going to help with her self-awareness in terms of understanding when Rex, you know, offers a suggestion about something, whether it's something he wants to do around the house or somewhere he wants to go or just what have you. She will have second thoughts. She will kind of take a pause and just think things through a little bit more before she will kind of show or exhibit the default behavior of discouraging him or shooting his suggestions down, because you can't expect someone to keep offering or suggesting things if the feedback that they get is perpetually negative. I think that's expected. I don't think that's out of the ordinary or strange to have them react or respond in that way. So I'm rooting for them. I think that they've done a lot of work in the sessions, you know, that we've seen, and they want to stay together, and they both understand, you know, ultimately what they had to give up, or particularly Joey, as far as like her relationship with her mother, what she had to give up to be with him. And you can tell that they really do love each other and they want to make it work. So I'm rooting for them. I'm thinking about Eliana and Mitch too. I think over the course of the season, and specifically in these latter episodes, they're starting to feel a little bit more comfortable with each other when it comes to the vulnerability piece. And I think their communication is becoming clearer too, because with the help of Orna, Eliana is forced to better articulate how she's feeling, because Orna noticed that she uses cursing, she uses swearing to almost kind of mask how she's feeling, and it helps her to still have control. But then Orna challenged her to express how she feels without cursing, and she was able to share how sometimes she feels loneliness, even in her relationship with Mitch. And sometimes she is worried or thinking that Mitch is thinking of leaving her, you know, if they have like a pretty intense argument. And Mitch reassured her that that's never, since he's moved into her apartment with her and they've been living together with their son, he has not thought about leaving. And I think that was really important for Eliana to hear, because of, you know, whatever experiences she's had in the past, which she did talk to us about in previous episodes, I would understand why she would have a fear of abandonment and mistrust when it comes to things like this. But having someone in Mitch who isn't perfect, but Eliana's not perfect either, you know, ultimately still wanting to make it work, I think is going to help her with feeling a little bit more secure. And I think sometimes it's understated how much clear communication and just letting your partner hear that you are there and you're not going anywhere and you're in it for the long haul, you know, as long as they both actively work towards being better for themselves and each other, that it can really help the other person feel less anxiety and insecurity about where they stand in a relationship. So I see a lot of progress that they've made too. I think they're getting better at communicating how they feel with each other in a more respectful way. And it looks like they gained a lot of insight in how each person kind of perceives the world around them and, you know, as a result, how they act. So moving on to Alexis and Casimar. You can tell that they really, really love each other. But particularly with Alexis, I think he has further to go when it comes to working through the trauma that he has been through. And you can't minimize the experiences that he's had. You can't minimize both of their history as far as what they've been through. But it just seems to me that Casimar is just a little bit more further along. And I think that might have to do with him, based off of what I saw in the show, it seems to me like he has more creative outlets to be able to process how he's feeling. He's a dance teacher. He writes. Like, these ways of putting out ideas and thoughts into the world do a lot to help us work through situations and experiences and traumas from our past, whether we're aware of it or not. So I know Casimar talked a lot about what dancing does for him, what writing does for him, how it just helps him to process what he's actively going through and what he's been through before. And that's why I think he's kind of further along. And that might be part of why he feels a little bit of responsibility with Alexis, with trying to help him, even though that's just too much for one person to put on themselves. And I think he's kind of realizing that too. I just wonder if Alexis has any of those type of outlets for himself. A lot of the conversation in their sessions and with Orna's debriefing with her, like her peer group and her supervisor, was, you know, him kind of providing the financial stability with his real estate business, which is now in jeopardy because it was tied a lot to the Airbnb network in New York City, and they are now leaving the state. So I'm thinking a lot about Alexis, and I know he's doing work too, but I just feel like he has further along to go. And I just hope that if he doesn't have any outlets outside of therapy to kind of process what he's been through and what he's going through, I hope that he's able to find ones that work for him and that he connects with, because that's kind of what I see as far as differences between the two of them. Casimar has those things for himself. And that's why I think even with everything he's been through, he's better adjusted. And that Alexis needs those things for himself, you know, not just seeking support from Casimar, because that can end up being a lot, but just finding ways for him to work through the things that have been hurdles or emotional challenges for him, because I think that would only help with their dynamic as a unit moving forward. Moving on to Lorena and Aaron and Josh. If you've listened to my commentary about this show for this season, you might have noticed that I've always kind of had a little bit of a harder time describing my thoughts around them. But I think what I come away with listening to their sessions with Orna, particularly when it comes to Lorena, I think it's highlighted in the last few episodes, maybe even the last one itself, that she has, whether it was intentional or not, she has become a secondary partner to the two polyamorous relationships that she's in. And she is not sure. She's not secure in the idea that she is able to fully realize her relationship with Josh, with Aaron there. And she is always afraid, or there is a concern for her that Aaron is going to have veto power, quote unquote, when it comes to certain things. They don't touch really at all on her second polyamorous relationship, but she makes it clear that she is a secondary partner in both. So I, you know, have struggled with describing or talking about this unit from the beginning, but I agree with Orna when she gave her final commentary that these dynamics are difficult because they are unconventional. You know, they are not typical relationships, but then the feelings are still consistent with how one would feel if they were in a heterosexual monogamous relationship between two people. You're trying to have better control over your emotions when it comes to the two partners, and you know, you are not included, but at the same time, you're still human and you're still in a relationship, and you want to make sure that your standing in the relationship is solid. And that's what I think Lorena struggles with. So I think I'm going to kind of leave it at that, because I feel out of my depth when it comes to them. But I encourage you to, if the commentary that I've shared about couples therapy throughout these past few episodes are interesting, I'd recommend that you watch the show, because honestly, with the 10 or 15 or however many minutes that I used to talk about these individuals, it does not do the show justice. And it's really amazing to see Orna in action with her helping these couples process what they're going through and what might be contributing to the problem in front of them. So I hope you enjoyed my insight on the episodes, starting from episode 1. I encourage you to watch the show yourself. I think you can get a free trial on Paramount Plus if you've not signed up with them before. All the episodes are on the platform. You could like binge it and then cancel. But yeah, I think I'm going to end the podcast here. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, I appreciate you. I can't believe our next episode will be the 3-year anniversary. I think I mentioned this before, that I created a list of 35 lessons for turning 35, which is what I turned this year. So next episode, I'm going to share all the lessons. And then the episode after that, I'm going to pick a few specific ones and talk more in depth about. So that's what you can expect for the next couple of episodes. Please share, please recommend, as always, to anyone who will like the content of this episode or past episodes. Please reach out to me, email me at contact@theLettersAndLayers.com or message me on Instagram, Amaka_AG. All that information will be in the show notes. And I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you in the next episode. Bye.